Carpenter drops it back in turn for Matthews. Matthews to center. Left wing feed in over the line. Got it again. Matthews swinging it around the boards, and Nylander will trap at the near point. Quickly into the slot for Riley. Now to Matthews. A shot. Scores! Austin Matthews has hit 69! It never sounded so sweet. One more to go.
Double minor coming to a close here as it's sent around to the near side. For Nylander, whipped it across. Riley, Marner, and now scores! Austin Matthews has 69!
Nice.
Santos. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. A nice good morning to you, Brent.
Yeah, it's a good and nice morning.
Yeah. Austin Matthews has 69 goals.
Okay, we good? We both did it?
Yeah.
We did it.
We did
they
the
did
thing.
It. Everyone else will do it.
Yeah.
In our own myriad of ways, being like, I'm too good for this. No, we're not. Nice. There we go. We're done. We move on.
No, it was, well, we're
no, not moving,
not moving,
like, moving
and
on
and that's
that.
It for Austin Matthews, Toronto Maple Leafs talk.
See you guys later.
On to 2 hours and 59 minutes of Masters talk. No, we'll get to the Masters as well.
Don't tempt me.
Yeah. I mean, really? You feel like you have a lot of Masters content
more
after that disappointing final round?
I mean, it's this is more a conversation for, like, we'll have a little bit of it today. I have a golf show with McKee that I'm going to take the pod of later. It's like, yeah, I have expansive.
That's you're going to save your good golf takes
no,
for that?
No, I'd say I actually would save, like, my more, like, I give the good takes on both platforms, but that's where I, like, stretch out the B idea to see if it can be an A idea.
Mm.
But here is where I bring only the A ideas.
I see.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay.
Not really?
You're taking more shots at the dartboard.
Yeah, exactly. Here, I bring what's good. I know. It's like, I got good golf thought. Here it is. Mm-hmm. Golf show. It's more the range. You know, some things out. Maybe I hit a flop shot there.
Yeah.
Maybe it works.
Yeah.
Maybe I scull it 37 feet over the green.
And you're not even attempting that shot here.
No, why
you're
would
only
I?
Doing the shots that you know you can hit.
This is Fan Morning Show. This is 18 at Augusta. I got to thread the needle on that tight little fairway.
Yeah, it's the most
intimidating tee shot.
Guy. Yeah. It's and it's less intimidating since they got rid of the Eisenhower tree, but
it's true.
All right.
Well, they didn't get rid of it. Like
Mother Nature did.
God was like, "Smite you down. Make this easier for Scotty."
We will have plenty of Masters.
Hey, you tempted
thoughts.
Me.
I know. It was my mistake.
Put a little cheese in the trap, and guess what? Both of us are stuck in it now.
I mean, but yeah. Austin Matthews scoring 69 goals is also a trap for you.
You're right.
Like,
you're
so right. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
Where I would have started. Anyway, so he's one away from 70.
Mm.
With two more kicks at the can after Maple Leafs lose consecutive games. This one in overtime, despite coming back from a three-goal deficit against the Detroit Red Wings on Hockey Night in Canada. And it was a moment. It felt like there was a real potential for, like, a historic moment, considering, you know, they're on a four-minute power play.
Yeah.
And immediately upon scoring number 69, almost has number 70, like, seconds later on a clear-cut breakaway, and then almost breaks his neck going into the end boards. Anyways, there's lots to talk about from this game and two regular season games remaining, both in the state of Florida upcoming this week before the postseason starts on the weekend. The Leafs locked into the third spot in the Atlantic Division. But let's start with Sheldon Keefe, whose brain is apparently being melted by everything that's happening surrounding Austin Matthews. Here's Sheldon Keefe at the conclusion of Saturday's game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a major distraction. It doesn't help us, you know, what we're trying to accomplish on the ice. But it's exciting. I get it. You know, and it's... especially when he gets to 69, you can see it. It's growing, anticipating, and now you're feeding it. You know, I'm feeding it. You know, I want it to happen, but I wanted it for the fans. You know, but I'm glad the game's over. Let's move on.
So
that was so relatable because it does not matter what walk of life you've been in. We've all been answering a question and you're trying to say all the right things and you're doing it, but you finally reach a breaking point where you actively cannot put on the facade of answer anymore. And you're like, okay, good. We good there. Everyone got what they needed out of that.
Yeah.
I can no longer continue on like this.
Okay.
So, it's so good. That ending of just like, oh, I'm happy it's over. God.
Okay. Here's the proper context. This is a fella in Sheldon Keefe who said Yeah, it's not. We've talked to Austin. We have all under. We've come to the understanding. Mm-hmm. Not his number one priority. It's about the postseason and making sure we're in shape for the postseason. And it's nice to chase something. And individual statistics are one thing, but we all understand the greater goal here is postseason success. Okay, so that's part of the context. Yeah. The other part is on Saturday, Austin Matthews played 1 second shy of 24 minutes in the hockey game, his most since February 5th. He played a final shift lasting 3 minutes and 33 seconds.
Would have believed 3 hours, to be perfectly honest.
There was a timeout thrown in the middle there, but still. To that point, he burned his timeout in a meaningless hockey game, it should be added. Because by that point, Leafs are already locked into three. Yep. It's not meaningless for the Red Wings, and you could tell with the celebration after the overtime victory how much it meant to Detroit. But that's a meaningless, like there is not one thing to be taken from that hockey game and the points accumulated or the 1 point accumulated by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Burning his timeout, playing Austin Matthews 24 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see how he's deployed in these final two games, which should be noted are not in Toronto. No. And that was part of one of the answers that Sheldon Keefe also gave is like, I'm pretty sure these fans, all of them aren't traveling to Florida. There'll be some.
To which I said, I'm not even a big, I think you should leave guy, but I gave that a big you sure about that? Yeah. That was my immediate reaction when I saw that from Sheldon Keefe. Have they had a interim coach for all the Florida games in his tenure?
I mean, all the everywhere games, really. Really? But specifically the Florida games.
It's like, we all know. It's the Prairies, Vancouver, where else? Buffalo, we know. They like to take over there. It's like the 100
Arizona,
home barns. Arizona.
When they had a hockey team at one point.
Maybe they go to Utah, keep rubbing it in. You can't produce somebody like this. That was my immediate reaction to that part of it is, there's going to be a pretty sizable chunk of Leaf fans there, and they're going to be extremely loud about one thing and one thing only, Sheldon.
Yeah, so last time we talked to Luke Fox, I did mention that, hey, if Sheldon Keefe plays Austin Matthews in these final games chasing 70, he's a liar, which is it's in jest. Yeah. I don't mean he's a liar. Mm. Okay, is he a liar or is he evolving on the fly? Is it a guy going counter to what he said? Is that bad? Is it bad that Sheldon Keefe is operating for one game at least?
Yep.
It cannot be. There's no debate about this. Yep. For one game on Saturday, Sheldon Keefe acted like any fan would in his deployment of Austin Matthews.
He did. Here's the question I have about this, and this is a very Blue Jays-y topic, but I think it has to be asked regarding this, is we sure? We keep talking about this as Sheldon Keefe's decision, and I don't think if Sheldon Keefe is hammering the table, this is the wrong decision for our club, how could you make me play him? I think he could win the argument if he was that impassioned one way or another, but with something like this, Brendan Shanahan, the whole thing he's come in here to do is yes, create a winning atmosphere and all that, but make everybody the happiest and to, again, go back to Babcock, to make it safe. Brought Keon back into the fold. He put the statues out there. A big part of Shanahan's legacy here, hopefully, is winning something one day. But if it isn't, it's going to be the making things safe, the returning things to respectability, the understanding of history. So how, if you're Brendan Shanahan, can you not at least, I'm not saying he's going there and offering his opinion to people, but he's got an opinion on the matter, whether Austin Matthews should play these last two games to chase 70. Brad Treliving, I don't think we have enough of a track record with him. I don't think in Calgary he ever had somebody pushing 70 goals, so I don't know that we have a track record for what he would do.
I'd say probably not, because nobody has been.
Right. So how does he feel about all this? I think this is one of those decisions where, given the legacy that it would be franchise, it won't be franchise defining, but this, if he gets 70 goals, it will forever be a pillar of great Maple Leafs feats. That how can this decision just rest at the hands of Sheldon Keefe or Austin Matthews and Sheldon Keefe? How are you going to tell me that this isn't a bigger organizational decision?
Maybe. That's scary to me, though, if we're talking about micromanaging. It is, but it isn't. This is Sheldon Keefe's team. it's not meaningless if Austin Matthews plays 30 minutes on Saturday and, you know, is gassed or like gets hurt, which it can happen in any game. And boy, again, it like took him a while to get up after crashing into the end boards.
Never mind all the other fatalities.
Oh my God. We can talk about Jake McCabe
and his face.
He is going to have a nice playoff face when we hit the postseason, assuming that he's there
alive,
which I think like, these guys generally, when it's a Warriors. Face thing, like, okay, only, so he wears a bubble or a cage or whatever.
It's only his face.
Ben. Yeah, it's only his face. It's true. It'll just make it easier to block a shot with his face the next time.
That's a great point.
The Bobby McMahon of it all, that one's a little more curious because it's like, ooh, where did that happen? Those type of things were
always concerning.
Yeah.
My read on that, the hope was like, this is, to everyone's point, a meaningless game, and Bobby McMahon's being in that game should not have really affected Austin Matthews' ability to score 70 goals. So I think it's like, if you're worried about protecting everybody, then why not, Matt, shut him down, get out of here. And it's one less forward, so more ice for Matthews. No,
100%. If you got a hangnail in that hockey game, you're coming out.
You're treated like a baseball pitcher.
Yeah.
And so, little blister? Yeah, why don't you go sit down?
Sheldon Keefe did also allude to like some roster issues they might have these final two games as well because of the salary gap, because of guys that aren't exactly healthy, that they might not be able to even ice a full roster for these two games.
You know what that means? We're not getting Matt Murray. Unfortunately.
Well,
maybe that's the problem. They're like, we have to get Murs in.
Yeah.
Murray Murdog.
He did get the Marlies into the postseason in net for their postseason clinching game. And no doubt, I expect him to be like on the depth chart and available. No, goalie number four in the postseason.
You think we're not getting a shot of Matt Murray and popcorn in the press box somewhere?
100%.
In a suit? Hopefully looking less injured than he did when they trotted him out at the beginning of the season this year.
Back to the matter at hand, though.
Right, yes.
Austin Matthews. And it's true. Like 70, it's just an arbitrary number. Like 69 is still unbelievable. Nobody's going to hit 60 this season. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Austin Matthews at maybe 70, and nobody else hitting 60 after it felt like the dam had burst last year with Connor McDavid and David Pastrnak. Nobody else is going to hit 60.
Nope.
Austin Matthews is going to be 15 goals up on second place finisher in the Rocket race. So it's if the point was, wow, what a separation between he and the second place finisher when it comes to the Hart Trophy debate, and boy, we're going to have Frank Cervelli on again today. You may have to take over.
You're just going to keep poking the bear there? I think he's made his opinion pretty clear on the matter.
Yeah. Not enough has changed between last week and this week in our conversation with Frank Cervelli that I don't think his opinion will have changed too much. But, okay, 70 it's just a nice round number. Mm-hmm. But it is, like, for reasons unknown to me, we've decided as a human race that, like, increments of 10 is like important, right?
Yeah.
And that 60 and 70 when it comes to birthdays and when it comes to goal scoring, that's important. He's already surpassed anybody active in the NHL. 69 is already an insane number, but we all know how much he wanted 70 Saturday.
Of course.
He wanted to do it at home. You know he wants to finish the season with 70. But, I mean, Sheldon Keefe has already, like I said, been on the record as saying it's not our number one priority by any stretch of the imagination. Austin Matthews knows that. How do you think this plays out in these final two games? I think, obviously, he's going to play tomorrow, I would say. Mm. That's definitive. But if he doesn't score tomorrow, and Sheldon Keefe, again, going through his history, he's sat guys on 99 points.
Mm-hmm.
He sat Austin Matthews after eclipsing the 60-goal mark. If he plays him in game number 82, after he's still sitting on 69 goals, it seems pretty clear that he's going counter to what he told us already on the record.
Yeah, he did. I think, man, there's so much to take out of this of like what is ultimately like a dumb discussion. But the thing with Keefe is that I'm sure he wanted to take the hard and fast line of, we're not going to play him after once he gets it. It's not the most important thing, da-da-da-da-da. Wholly expecting him to get it and playing him 25 minutes in that game.
That was the dream for him. He's like, please score, please score, please score.
And then I get to be the tough guy who was going to take a hard line in the sand and let me throw this stick away because I don't need to draw a line in the sand anymore.
You can be the guy that said, even if he hadn't scored 70, we would have arrested him these final two games.
Solitary confinement. We can't let anything happen to him. We're locking him in his room. He's going to be like Bozy, just sitting on the end of the bed, playing his video games in Phil Kessel's apartment. You could have done that. But now, this is a much realer thing. I think
It is interesting to me that tomorrow seems like the obvious game he would play, because if you're worried about injury, what are we worried about? Yeah. Are we worried about a fluke play, or are we worried about something that is helped along and is a fluky injury? Because I don't think I, even me, in my doomsday of doomsday scenarios, do not think the Florida Panthers are going to call up Ogie Oglethorpe from whoever is playing for the Florida Everblades down there, or whatever their ECHL team is. I don't think they're going to call up some thug to destroy Austin Matthews. But if you're worried about somebody taking that one extra liberty or that one extra shot, are we worried about Tampa Bay? Or are we worried about the team that the Leafs are going to play in the first round of the playoffs? Like, that is the thing I cannot wrap my head around, is if he's going to play one game, why would it be against the team that has every incentive to ding him up and get in his face and make his night as difficult as it possibly could be? And you don't need to burn your best bullets to do that. The Panthers can do that without using a Matthew Tkachuk. Or if they want to say, we're going to take Tkachuk out of this game, even sit him down, they have the personnel to do that without burning their best guys in that way. So that's the thing that's so curious to me about this, is if he's going to play, and I agree with you, the tenor does seem, well, okay, the Florida game, that's the one that's way more concerning to me. And I'm not trying to accuse anybody. This isn't a... there's money on the board. I'm blanking on the Saints defensive coordinator, Greg Williams. Like, this isn't like money on the board for headshots on Austin Matthews, but it absolutely is. Finish every check. And if you take a charging penalty or an interference penalty, you take a charging or an interference penalty. So why would you put him in that game versus the floor or the Tampa one?
That's a tough one. I mean, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, I could be proven incorrect here tomorrow when, yeah, there are guys lining up to run Austin Matthews' head through the glass. I find that a little hard to believe, especially considering what's not on the line for the Panthers, unless they really, really think that the Bruins are going to take their foot off the gas for these final games. So the Bruins have two games left. Mm-hmm. The Panthers' final game is tomorrow against the Maple Leafs. They are 1 point back of the Bruins, and how much do they even want to finish in the top spot in the Atlantic Division, which would assure themselves pretty much a meeting in the first round with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
But they're 1 point back. They pick up 2 points in that game, and the Bruins pick up none in their final two games against the Capitals and the Senators. Then they can win the Atlantic Division. Yeah. I tend to think that we're not going to see a very representative lineup. And you're right that
they don't need a representative one.
I suppose. I think that's the Leaf fan,
okay,
in you talking about the possible worst case scenario. And I would take a line from Max Homa, way you should approach this. Anytime you let the worst possible scenario play out in your head, allow yourself to think about the best possible scenario. Okay,
you did it again. You put the golf cheese in the trap. I saw that quote, and again, that's a wonderful quote. I don't know if you have the same reaction to it. I was like, you could just do that?
Yeah.
You could just think a good thing would happen? Mm-hmm. A foreign concept to me. I don't know.
Yeah. The bad thoughts tend to overwhelm the good thoughts, and that's why you're probably only going to be thinking about the possibility of a devastating injury to Austin Matthews. You know what? So is Sheldon Keefe. That's why he said the thing, right?
I also think you have to weigh, and I don't think you get a more motivated Austin Matthews in game one if he does tick 70 off, but... is there some, like, how much can you weigh the, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a better analogy here, but, like, the Fast and the Furious, like, Nas boost you can give to Austin Matthews if he does hit 70? Like, is there some element of him being able to, and again, none of this is promised, right? Like, just because he doesn't play it in these last two games doesn't mean he's going to be fresh as a daisy for the playoffs.
I think he's going to play in one.
Okay, so you sit him for one of these games. It's like, does that really change how fresh he is?
It removes the possibility
of getting hurt, right?
The postseason is going to start on Saturday. How many days does he need? There's an argument to play him in both games, really.
Yeah.
These guys are such creatures of habit. We've seen time and time again this season, guys return to the lineup after long layoffs and not look like themselves.
It is nice that it's a back-to-back, because it does give Keefe the easy... If these games this week were Monday, Wednesday, then you don't have the built-in excuse of, look, you don't need a back-to-back right before the playoffs to kill yourself in these games. But if it's Monday, Wednesday, it's so much harder to do that. It actually is, I think, saved to a certain extent by that they're back-to-back games there.
Okay, let's revisit this conversation later on, because there's other things to talk about from Saturday's game. I think prime among them
is Ilya Samsonov and getting a chance to finish that game. And you know what? Thank goodness for his sake. Thank goodness for the discourse sake that he was allowed to. He eventually gives up the game-winning goal in overtime. And yes, over his last two games has a save percentage of .788, giving up 11 goals. It's not what you want.
Mm-mm.
But he did make some saves at the end of that game.
Yep.
Especially in the dying seconds to get it to overtime to get the point for the Maple Leafs.
Crucial point.
Sure. The first period was like all the worst. Like, it was like watching a highlight reel of Ilya Samsonov's first half of the season.
Yeah, it was December Sammy poked his head up, yeah.
Okay, I think, and you can disagree with this, but I think the die is already cast for him starting game one. Like, he's starting game one, and maybe it's not the case of, like, they let him play the final 40 minutes of that game, and it looks more like the opening 20. And we'll see if he plays in one of these final two games. I assume he's going to play in one. But I will say the things that we've seen in the last two games, for me, if it were me, has made the leash shorter come the postseason. I'm not talking about, loses game one, you go to wall game two. Like, I think that was a possibility before first two games. I think it's now a possibility of, oh my goodness, it's only 2-0 after the first period, but those two goals are stinky smelly. And here comes Joseph Woll for the second period of game one. Like, that's where I'm at. The leash is back to super short for me with Ilya Samsonov.
No, I think that's completely fair. I wasn't thinking of it in terms of like a leash perspective. I was just thinking of it in terms of like if you're doing the old school like ledger of like, okay, these two teams stack up. How do you like the forwards? How do you like the forwards? How do you like the D?
Oh, yeah.
If you would have asked me a week and a half ago, how do you feel about the Leafs goaltending going into any of these series? I wouldn't say they are getting the tick in that box. Mm-hmm. But it's a conversation. I can squint and talk myself into it. These two games have been enough to undo that for me, to where I no longer sit here. And I don't think this is proven that the Leafs goaltending will definitively be their Achilles heel. I think there are other things on this team that will definitively be their Achilles heel. But it has definitely worked its way into a worry for me over the last two games. How could it not be? I agree with you that if that is a playoff game last night, you're 100% getting Woll in there after the way it looked. I also think that's awesome coaching by Sheldon Keefe to bring him back and let him battle through. We talked about it. I'm trying to think after what game it was, but when the Matthews, Domi, and Bertuzzi line had struggled for a period and he talked about letting them work through it, that is counterintuitive to everything he has ever done as head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, obviously, goaltending is a different animal than when you're talking about a forward line. You're going to have to try to overcome things with a goalie at times, but I think that's just awesome coaching, giving him the opportunity to do that. But yeah, how can the leash not be shorter? And this has always been the thing about the Joe Woll, is that he doesn't have to do anything to get back in the good graces of management. You just kind of sit there treading water, and Samsonov will swim a little ahead of him, and then the current will like bring him back, and then you're back into a conversation. I think that's why Joe Woll always has been lurking in the back of the minds for this kind of coaching staff, is because of just the uncertainty with a guy like Samsonov. And Joe Woll just hasn't had a long enough track record to prove whether he's certain or not. He's been fairly certain in the times we've seen him, but this blip post-injury has not been what you wanted. So, yeah, I think that you're still giving Samsonov the net. There's nothing that can happen between now and then. But I think if it's a bad performance, like if they lose 2-1 the first game, you're going back to Samsonov.
I mean, I guess it depends on how it looks.
Of course. If it's 2-1 and they're both stinkers, then yeah, sure. But I don't know, like how good would he have to be outside of those two stinkers to win a game like that? You're right. It is obviously a little circumstantial dependent. But I feel like if they win and he is competent, he's back in, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if they have to win and it's a 5-4 game and two of the goals are not great, there's a big chance that Joe Woll's back in the net for me after that.
Mm-hmm. It's honest. It's not the worst, and anything can happen come game one. But the way both goalies have played down the stretch, it's pretty close to like the nightmare scenario in goal. Like pretty close. Because you're like, oh, who's going to take the reins? And it's like, well, someone will take the reins.
The horse is just standing there, the reins on the floor.
And maybe this is also the obvious take to your point about evaluating a matchup between the Leafs and the Panthers. Mm-hmm. I look at the goaltending as the number one discrepancy between these two teams. It might have been the number one reason the Leafs lost in five games to them last year, right? And Samsonov gets hurt in game three, and Joe Woll, by save percentage, doesn't play poorly. But, gets out-dueled by a guy who's got some Vezinas. So, and that guy is going to be in goal and has a .915 save percentage this season. It's the number. It's not the toughness.
No.
Despite the toughness that the Panthers showed in the five games last season, the Leafs are a different team this
year.
They
got toughness now.
Sure. It's maybe the goal scoring. Like, I don't think there's a 70 goal scorer on the Panthers, but no. I would evaluate the goaltending the way, if you were a Panthers fan, you feel about your goaltending compared to the way Leaf fans feel about their goaltending. Yeah. That is the number one reason to believe that the Panthers would win a first round series against the Leafs.
Yeah, I am with you there. Side note, I saw a child like wearing a Sergei Bobrovsky jersey out in the wild this weekend. Didn't like that.
In Burlington?
Yeah, like Burlington Oakville on the border there. Yeah. I know.
That's a weird one.
Yuck.
All right, anything else from this game? We mentioned the Bobby McMahon injury, which, I mean, Nick Robertson scores again because that's all he does is score.
Even when he didn't score in, like, the last game on Thursday, like, he scored, but they called it back.
Yeah.
He just scores all the time.
Yep. Yeah, whether they count or not, he scores.
The Robertson thing, I actually think this is just the perfect case scenario for the next team he inevitably plays on. Like, this is just going to make him such a great shark, how much he's going to feel like he was always looked over.
That sounds so rude, though.
I know, but it is a classic guy who has done so much and taken so many strides, and there's just still not a spot for him. I do think he has made enough strides that he is kind of in the position Timothy Liljegren was in 2 years ago, where they go, God, we got to, like, give this guy a look. But we want to win. We can't just force feed him minutes in a lineup on a team that wins. Like, he doesn't
need minutes, though.
He needs
a second, and he scores.
Yeah, you're right. He'd be a perfect Raptor. Like, they just need some shooting, you know? Like, just, like, give him a couple open looks a game. The Robertson thing is, it's great to see, and I feel like I've brought this point up before, but I do just want to hammer it home again. Having a guy who is showing, and this isn't to say that Nick Robertson is going to be like the fixer and every time he comes in the playoffs, he's going to score a goal.
Mm-hmm.
But having a guy who is showing an ability to sit long stretches of the season and come in and provide jolts of offense, this Leafs team, there's many things that they've needed throughout playoff series, saves chiefly among them at times. But how many times we talked about, God, what would you give for somebody who could just come in and give a little boost of offense in the bottom half of this lineup? He is perfectly cast in that role. So I think if the Leafs have, I mean, you can say this about it, just about anybody on the roster, I suppose. But if the Leafs have even a modicum of a run, like, I'm talking conference final, Nick Robertson's going to have a game or two where we come in here and, yeah, there's a million other things to talk about, but it was the Nick Robertson game.
You know where the NBA comp exists for Nick Robertson?
Mm.
It's a guy like Jamal Crawford.
Yes.
Like, three-time.
Microwave, yeah.
Six man of the year. Just like. Yeah, off the bench.
That's great. I love that comp. That's very good.
That Nick Robertson is Jamal Crawford.
In terms of the, like, we kind of touched on this, but I just want to hammer home the point again. The injuries. Like, I don't think that changes Sheldon Keefe's mind of, like, Jake McCabe dropping like fly and Bobby McMahon getting hurt. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, like, if anything, that further emboldened Sheldon Keefe to sit Austin Matthews down. Do you think it gives any of the fan base any pause over City? Like, did anybody watching that game, and not in the immediate moment, but like now, sober, Monday morning, I hope, as you drive to work, please be sober. Mm. Unless, you know, your buddy's driving you, and then it's your boss's problem, not mine. Do you think anybody sits there who was banging the table saying, you must play Matthews, you must get him to 70, is going, okay, that was a little scary. Maybe 70 is not so important. Do you think it changed anybody's mind one way or another?
You should have been aware of the possibility of injury before that. Like, I don't know. I didn't need a reminder. Like,
no,
I understand.
But, like, I'm aware of the possibility of a car crash. Mm-hmm. But if I see one on the road,
you get reminded.
No, I'm
it's
like,
more real.
Yeah, I'm just like, don't get in a car. Like, it's like, don't get in a car crash. Good reminder for that.
I will say, all the discourse and all the words that are going to be used today to talk about the fretting.
The best words will be used today.
Yes, over the next 2.5 hours, especially on this radio station, that it feels so important right now, and it is so important right now.
Mm-hmm.
After, let's say, okay, Thursday, it's going to be still important because we'll be breaking it down. Come Friday, irrelevant, forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so what? You'll be able to go to his hockey reference page and you'll see 69 instead of 70, just like you can go to Mitch Marner's page from last year and you can see 99 instead of 100. It's important. It would be cool. I think Sheldon Keefe understands this as well.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think he's going to play game 82
so,
on Wednesday. I think everybody, we're on to the next shiny object, and it's like the shiniest of all objects. The narrative and the potential fallout of what is about to occur in the postseason for this team.
Yeah,
I think that will supersede everything. This won't even be a conference. Like, when we're evaluating this season and whatever the Maple Leafs do, whether it's losing the first round or go to a cup final or win a cup, like, how far down the pecking order will it have to be before we're starting a conversation about, hey, but Sheldon Keefe, remember when he didn't play Austin Matthews on 69 goals in game number 82? It'll be a ways down.
Well, and not that this wouldn't be topic number one if it was still a thing, but he's locked up. Like, this isn't a, you got to keep him happy.
Right.
He's going to walk this offseason. Last thing, just to bookend the 69 conversation we've been having this morning.
Yeah.
Is it almost better if he finishes with 69 goals? Because the season, like, truly lives in infamy, and it's every, like, non-hockey fan's, like favorite, like, ha-ha, look at my dumb joke. Like, if it's 70 goals, it's a big round number, and we talk about it. Mm-hmm. But, like, that becomes, like, an internet joke. It becomes, like, a meme thing.
And it's not 67. Like, he didn't even sit on 67 for a whole game. Like, what a brilliant move scoring two goals in that game.
When he scored the 68th goal, I wanted to just run down there because I was in the building and shake his hand. Go, thank you so much for not making me do... Because I would have come in here the next day and just done 3 hours on the curse that it is inevitably going to happen when he finishes the year on this. So... thank you so much for that. But I actually do think a small part of me, obviously he wants, for hockey history, you want the big round number.
70 feels better than 69. Just like when you're golfing, 79 like is a world apart from 80, or 89 a world apart from 90.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it shouldn't be. It's just one stroke. It's just one goal.
But it matters.
It does.
As a man who has been dying to get under 90, and shot 91 for his last round of the year. Boy, it matters. It matters.
All right. When we come back. Getting to 500 also kind of like psychologically important for the Blue Jays.
Does it.
Especially against a team like the Rockies. They did it, though. Back to 500. We'll get into Jose Berríos' apparent American League Cy Young Award push next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Yeah, psychologically, something about getting to 500. And certainly being below 500 after losing a series to the Colorado Rockies would have been bad. But no such issues for the Blue Jays as they take 2 out of 3 after losing the opener. Kevin Gausman's not so great right now, but it's okay. Jose Berríos taking over as the staff ace as he lowers his ERA to 1.05. How good is that? Well, according to Sportsnet producer Chris Black, it's the best four-start stretch of Jose Berríos' entire career. This is a guy that's been an opening day starter for the Minnesota Twins. This is a guy that's gotten Cy Young Award votes. He had a great bounce-back season last year, but he is at the absolute peak of his powers at the moment.
Yeah, preaching the choir, man. This is somebody I'm not going to say I was bullish on from the jump of the trade. Then obviously he has the down season afterwards and you're wondering what's happening there. But when you have a guy who is able to, he just posts, like he takes a ball every fifth day, he's going to give you 30 plus starts a year. And the fact that he is being able to give you innings so consistently and they've been so good this year, I don't think you can overstate what it means given Gausman's struggles. They need this guy to be their front of the line ace. Say what you will about Kikuchi and Bassett. You can be as high on them as you want. They're not going to be the ace of a staff that is going to go on and do any damage. So you need Berríos to be that guy. And, you know, we talk about it as well. Like, this team hasn't needed it to be like the old Doc Halliday, but he's your stopper right now as well. Like, if you get on a slide, he is going to give you a chance every fifth day. And just everything I've said about that guy, he just checks all the boxes for just your ace. The durability, his ability to be consistently good, the ability to have stud-like games where you can get up to double-digit strikeouts relatively easily. It's just, it's everything you want, and you're seeing a more consistently great version of a guy who's been consistently good.
How do you define clutch? Because I would say that what he's done in these four starts has been clutch, because there's been limited Kevin Gausman, and we didn't know what we'd get out of Kevin Gausman. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think you're hoping that this is just a guy going through progressions of what should be spring training starts, and he'll figure it out. He'll be fine. It's going to be fine.
Please.
That everybody's calling for the overall regression of the starting rotation.
Mm-hmm.
That you already had an offense a season ago that wasn't good enough, and you didn't get any better. In fact, you got worse. The margin for error with him is tiny. It was tiny out of the get-go. He's the opening day starter. All right, Jose, what do you got for an encore? And what has he got for an encore? I mean, is, again, having the best four-start stretch of his entire career when they needed it the most. There's no backup option. There's no Alek Manoah walking through that door. We'll get to that in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
There's no Kevin Gausman for the moment, and maybe it eventually gets to this place, and maybe it's Yariel Rodriguez. We'll also get to.
Nice.
But there's no fallback plan here. Like, it's Chris Bassett, okay, taking steps in the right direction, and Yusei Kikuchi looks pretty close to the same guy that we saw a season ago, but nobody has the upside that Jose Berríos has and has shown for these four starts, and he's had to do it because the Blue Jays faced a pitcher that was the worst in baseball against right-handed hitters, and all the Blue Jays have are right-handed hitters. And, like, they scored some runs, but only four.
Yep.
It didn't exactly, like, look like they were pounding him to smithereens. That's going to be the recipe for this team, is get incredible starting pitching, get some great bullpen outings, which is trending in the right direction as well, and they're about to, I think, maybe as early as tonight, get Eric Swanson and maybe Jordan Romano back. But that's the recipe. He has to maybe not be as good as he's been, to the tune of two hits and seven strikeouts, no earned runs over seven innings, but be the ace of this staff if they have any hope of doing anything.
Yeah, he has to be. And I'm not going to sit here and pour dirt on Kevin Gausman, but I am going to be less and less certain that we're getting that version of him every time I don't see it. Say what you will. Again, you can be as high on Bassett and Kikuchi as you want. Those guys cannot even, you know, they could both be threes, I think, on a great team, but a 2-3 for your starting rotation, maybe if you have a big bopping lineup, but not for the pitching and defense team. You need your starting pitching to be great. Not good, but great. That's the only guy right now that is showing you the ability to do it. This is a slightly different conversation, but I think if we're going to talk about Berríos, you have to get it in here. This guy is also the blueprint for what baseball should be looking for in its starting pitchers. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say we should legislate 99 from Spencer Strider out of the game or 101 or
whatever.
He's
done that himself by blowing out his UCL.
You're right, he has. But I think you look at it, and with all the talk we have about the arm injuries and durability and everything, this is the poster child for how you can still be an incredibly effective, borderline dominant starting pitcher who is having a Cy Young start to his season and still have every reason to believe, it's baseball, guys get hurt all the time, but still have every reason to believe that he's going to be doing this in August. And that is something I don't think can be kind of overstated in all this, is that he is doing this in a way that is sustainable, not just from a performance, in that it's not 14 Ks every single night or anything, which you cannot expect. But he's also doing it in a way that you can expect his body to just hold up and sustain this performance.
Yeah, it's looking more and more, and it was at the time, like 2022 was the outlier season. His entire career, he's just not spent 1 second on the injured list, and he's been remarkably consistent. Not as good as he's been to start the season before, but yeah, I think if you had to, if Jose Berríos had to have the 2022 that he might have the 2024, it's a trade you might, in fact, take. So mentioned Yariel Rodriguez, who makes his major league debut over the weekend on a pitch limit, and we were understood was going to be piggybacked by Bowden Francis, and that's exactly the way it played out. It's a weird sport because, one, it's a team sport
just
that...
Agreed. I want to start there. Agreed.
One, it's a team sport, but that is kind of an individual sport, too.
Mostly.
And it's also one where it's like, the phrase is try easier, right? Like, when you look like you're emotionally invested, when it looks like you're really trying, that's usually when you start struggling. But there's something about, like, his mound presence, and it's... The results match the the thing that I'm talking about. So it's easy to say that they're related. And we'll see what he has in store for the second start. But yeah, there was, I think the Keegan Mathison tweet had everybody on high alert headed into that start on Saturday. This guy has real FU energy.
We like that.
One start against what we expect to be one of the worst teams in all of Major League Baseball should also be mentioned in the Colorado Rockies. Hey, Bowden Francis, love him. Like, he seems like a nice fella. The upside was like, oh, maybe a guy that can stick in the rotation all season.
Yeah.
Yariel Rodriguez, the upside is, well, we don't know. Mm-hmm. But like in his professional life, whether that be in Asia or in Cuba, it's been top of the rotation starter. And it's been a guy that has strikeout stuff. In his debut, I think we saw some of that.
Yeah, I mean, you can dream on it. I remember talking to BNS about this in camp, and I think the, like, I forgot exactly how I worded it, but it's something like the realistic dream scenario or something. And it was kind of starting like this, a guy who can give you bulk. It's not going to, I mean, he did start the game. It's not going to be a starter where he goes five innings even, but I think that this is a guy who will prove to be a weapon for this team one way or another, whether it ends up being a guy who is a kind of, you know, relatively limited starter where it's not five and dive because you think less of those guys, but you're just not expecting him to go deep into games, or he is your high leverage bridge, kind of what Nate Pearson, the role Nate Pearson kind of took up towards the kind of tail end of last year. And that, okay, it's an inning, but if you're cooking, yeah, sure, take one more, bridge the gap a little further to Romano and Swanson and Garcia, who's been great to start this year, and Chad Green. I think that one way or another, this guy is going to help this team. I think the question they have, and I think really it's a little bit about Bowden Francis, but it's also about Kevin Gausman, is if you need to take your shot to have another high-end starter, that's the only place it's coming from. It's not going to be Alek Manoah, at least not yet. It's certainly not going to be Bowden Francis. Sorry, love you, kid. But when you look at the options available, that's the one. He's the only guy that's sitting around.
Outside of Ricky Teeter.
Right, of course. But it's like, everything we've heard is that he ain't coming anytime soon, so let's just park him for now. That's the place where you have a market improvement, potentially, in your rotation. Mm-hmm. I ultimately do think he ends up being more that high-leverage, multi-inning guy, because I think that piece is just so valuable if you're a playoff team. But, yeah, that's how I ultimately kind of see it shaken out. But I think this is a great, great find. And this part has to be said. They give him a five-year deal. Mm-hmm. They need this to work. It's not a want for them. Like, this team giving somebody that amount of contractual time, gumming up the books, not that it's a ton of money, but beyond Bo, beyond Vlad, beyond Springer even, that shows how much they are invested in this guy as well.
Yeah, and he was, as much as there were numbers to take away, again, from his time in Asia, he was an unknown. Mm-hmm. So to have proof of concept both in Buffalo and then it translating to the major leagues against a bad team. But so what? They are major leaguers. Better than the players I'm sure he faced in the International League.
I would think.
I would hope. Blue Jays start a series against the Yankees tonight, who they lost 2-3 to in the Bronx in some lousy April weather. So it's indoors. You know what the Blue Jays' record was against teams above 500 last season?
I do not.
It's not good. It's 43-50 for a team that won 89 games. All those victories came in the fashion that you just saw over the weekend against crappy, crappy teams. Yep. The record within the American League East, we've gone over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And no bueno.
It wasn't very good. Blue Jays, of course, started the season 4-6 against the Rays, the Astros, and the Yankees, and then came home to play some bad teams, or at least one bad team, and to start the season, the Mariners are also a bad team. They continue to lose.
Yep.
They've gone 4-2 against the bad teams. How much of last season's record against good teams, it being bad, and their good record against bad teams is just, hey, fluke of the season, as opposed to some, like, you know, fatal flaw of this team, and how important is it to, like, start to pick up some victories against good teams?
Yeah.
There'll be bad teams. You got to win against the bad teams too. But like occasionally winning a series and having a better record against the good teams starts tonight.
Well, and the other thing as well, and I mean, you might disagree with this because you have pointed out ad nauseum that the 84 win Arizona Diamondbacks made the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, in the playoffs, you might, Like, you're more likely at least to face a good team.
Aren't likely to start Kyle Freeland, like, in a postseason series because they're not going to be
They're not going to be there. So I think when I go to that, I immediately look at a team that struggles to hit good pitching. That's, like, just right immediately where my mind goes with this. Generally speaking, the better your team is, the better your pitching is going to be. Blue Jays are a team that has struggled offensively. They run into good pitching. It's a struggle for them. And then their starters can only hold them afloat to a certain extent of a level. So that's where my mind immediately goes with that. That ain't a fluke. The other thing about this is it's baseball. It is this. It shouldn't be this way, but it is. It's hard to repeat the record you had against bad teams last year. Mm. You should be able to do it, but it's baseball. These games are more coin flip than anything else. And I also think that you just, when you play with the margin of victory that this team, or the margin, the thin margins that this team plays with, you're more likely to get bit in these one run games or bullpen games, even against bad teams. It should be easier to repeat, but there's no guarantee that you're going to take advantage of them the way you did last year as well. So yeah, it's super concerning.
Yeah, no, it's, I think you hit on it out of the gates.
Genius.
Thank
you.
This offense has shown a propensity to struggle against good pitching, which is, I mean, that's the nature of good pitching, that it's good.
Yeah.
And the other team is bad, looks bad offensively, but yeah, they've looked worse than bad against really good pitching.
We're splitting the atom here, right?
Yeah.
They struggle offensively when there's a good guy on the bump. It's tough.
Chris Bassitt against Luis Gil tonight in game one of three against the New York Yankees before heading out on the road to San Diego over the weekend. So I mentioned Alek Manoah making his first start for the Buffalo Bisons and didn't necessarily go so great. 3 1/3, 8 hits, 4 earned runs, only 1 walk though, and 4 strikeouts. Here is Alek Manoah talking about his first start for the Bisons.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, continue to attack, you know, and, you know, I can't control results. I can't control, balls in the infield. I can't control the weather. I can't control any of that. I can't control once the ball leaves my hand. I can make the best pitch possible, and they can hit it 400 feet. What am I supposed to do? So my job out there is to attack, and today I was attacking. I feel like, I was throwing the ball pretty well.
Okay, Brent. Is that a good thing that Alek Manoah has a positive spin on an outing that, like, I think just in a vacuum doesn't seem so good?
I did say wince when it's like, what am I supposed to do? Well, throw a better pitch, I think, is what you're probably supposed to do there. I completely understand him taking this tact. I'd love to sit here and do the, like, angry sports talk radio thing, like, ah, be more mad at yourself. Throw a chair at a reporter when he asks you how you thought it went or something. Please don't actually do that. We're past that. We don't need, like, a Hal McRae throwing phone situation here. But I think that this is for a guy who is, look, he got to the big leagues because of his stuff and his talent and the athlete that he is and all that. But at least, I don't know, what, 10, 15, maybe 20% of that was the attitude, the moxie, the charisma. I think he has to keep lying to himself and telling himself it's going great. That doesn't mean when he goes to work on everything that he was trying to work on in that game, he goes, no, this is fine. No, you have to be honest with yourself when you're working. But for a guy like that specifically, as much as I want to get mad at it, I completely understand taking the tact of, no, that was fine. And that's how I'm going to react to you guys. I really hope that's not what he's talking about with whoever the Bison's pitching coach is that he's walking through with this. But publicly, I actually don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it seems like a guy that's delusional. Like, he seems like he thinks something's happening that's happening.
That might be true also. I'm not blind to that reality, but I think the only path back to him is delusion. Or for him is delusion.
I guess. I think it's results. And I think this next quote that I'm going to read to you is kind of telling.
Thank you.
When it comes to his mental state. And again, like, this is, I'm not creating a problem where one doesn't exist yet. I'm just projecting as to what this could look like at the conclusion of this 30-day rehab stint, right? Part of it is Yariel Rodriguez looking great, too. That was a scenario that I outlined. I thought it might be Bowden Francis looking cromulent. That hasn't happened.
Wrong.
But Yariel Rodriguez looks more than that. And maybe they figured something out with the fifth starter. But in regards to, after a question that was asked of him, hey, what do you think the Blue Jays are looking from you when it comes to them activating you and returning you to the major leagues? I think they're
trying to look for me being healthy, and they know that the stuff is there, and those results will come. I feel like I threw the ball well today, so I just got to continue to build off that. So to me, that sounds like a guy that feels like either he's been told or he feels like the organization believes that results are irrelevant. Like he is Kevin Gausman or Jose Barrios or something.
Right.
That we didn't have like the body of work that existed in 2023. That he just needs to be healthy and throwing close to 100 pitches and the velocity needs to be there and the movement of the slider needs to be there. And it doesn't matter if he gets tattooed for 8 runs a game in the International League. He's coming back to the major leagues when he's deemed healthy. I do not think that's the case. And that's where I wonder if there's a collision course of two opposing thoughts coming up here in the coming weeks.
I think we're absolutely headed for that. I think the org has probably told him, hey, man, go down there and take care of your business and you will be back up here. And to him, he hears that as like just actively go pitch and however that goes. And the org says, no. We said take care of your business, not just be a sentient human. I also wonder for him, you know, not that he would come out and say it this way, how much Bowden Francis stinking has entered the equation for him. Like, I can do that.
Yeah.
I can get shelled at the major league level.
He was actually better than that last year.
So it's like, you don't have to get in a fight. Just let me stink up there like he is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is, like, I do think that has to enter the equation for him as well.
Yeah, but Yariel Rodriguez
I know.
Is good.
I know, but they're both here.
Yeah.
Spot.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very much on my radar.
Don't take this as me being like, Alek Manoah needs to be back in the big leagues. I am with you lockstep. I just think that I think that the org probably gave him every reason to believe that, again, if he took the steps needed, I just think maybe there's a miscommunication about what the steps needed are.
Yeah, it's not like throwing a bunch of pitches and then the results, whatever they are, you just kind of shrug. No, it's like, I actually need to see proof of concept of this actually translating into outs.
Me too.
And I know you can't control where the ball goes, but should be able to control how hard it's hit.
Just getting BABIP to death with the exit velo of like 105.
I don't know. Maybe that happened. Like maybe it's a bunch of bleeders.
Right. We don't know.
But I tend to think when you have 8 hits.
He did reference 400 feet as well.
Yeah.
So you do with that what you will.
All right. When we come back, your friend of mine, Gord Stellick, as the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.